One figure returned quietly to the rose garden. There was a proud line to the shoulders, to the lifted chin, a coiled power to the walk, which was more like a stalk. The eyes were intense and bright, but the shape of the mouth was at odds with the rest of it. Something about the expression there was miserable, vulnerable. Jordan Hennessy. "You have my sword," she said, stopping among the ruined thorns of the old roses. Warily, Farouk Lane stepped in front of Liliana. She put her hand on the hilt warningly. Her heart was beating fast again. Who knew what deadly dreams this Zed might be carrying? "I don't want to fight. We're not here for you."
"I know. I'm here for you."
Hennessy made a big performance of turning her pockets inside out and showing the interior of her leather jacket. Then she held her hands out on either side of her like a reveal.
"I'm giving up. This is what it looks like when I give up."
"How do I know this isn't a trap?" Farouk Lane asked.
"Life's a trap," Hennessy said in a sort of bleak, funny way.
Liliana stepped out from behind Farouk Lane, her face gentle and unsurprised, and Farouk Lane realized that Liliana had known this was how it was going to happen. She'd seen this in her vision. This moment. Not Farouk Lane slicing through Bride. She'd let Farouk Lane climb into that freezing water, knowing that she would fail to stop Bride when she sprang out. She'd known it was a ridiculous plan, and had let it play through for this moment. Not killing Bride, but acquiring this Zed. One more Zed than any other plan had ever managed. Would it have all worked the same way if Farouk Lane had been in on it from the beginning? Trust was a hard thing. "It's all right," Liliana told Hennessy. She walked straight up to her, as if she wasn't one of the three most dangerous Zeds in the country, and she clasped one of Hennessy's hands with such warmth that the Zed stared at her. "We all finally found each other."
33. Match heads flaring, plastic melting, paper twisting, gasoline smoking. Anything can burn if you hit it hard enough to jam oxygen atoms into its core. Ronan's heart incinerated.
"I'm driving," Bride had said. "You're unfit."
He was right. As the Boston skyline got smaller in the invisible car's rearview mirror, Ronan kept blinking as if things would get clear, and they never got clear. Or maybe they were too clear. Every streetlight, every skeleton tree, every billboard etched itself in his vision, every detail perfectly visible so that he couldn't concentrate on any one part of it. He sat bolt upright in the passenger seat, his leg jiggling. If he were driving, he'd mash that gas pedal down and see how much speed he'd really dreamt into this thing. If he were driving, he'd smash this whole car into something so it could burn too. His phone had been ringing continuously for the past 10 minutes. Furiously, he chucked it onto the dash. It pinged off the windshield and slid across the dash, then slipped down by Bride's footwell. Only one person had known where they were going to be. Only one person. Declan. Bride wordlessly leaned to get the little phone without looking, then dropped it in Ronan's palm. How many minutes had Declan waited before betraying Ronan to the moderators? Maybe he'd already done it before he got in touch with Ronan at the Aldana Leones, while Ronan was meeting the little dreamers whose lives he'd saved. Declan was making plans with the mods, casually bringing Ronan in for them, knowing Ronan always came when called.
"Either talk to him or silence it," Bride said. "Make a decision."
Ronan clipped the phone to his ear and answered it.
"What?"
"Thank God," Declan said.
"Where are you?"
"Like I will ever tell you that again. You fucking blew it, asshole. new low, even for you. Was it 30 pieces of silver, or did you get them to adjust it up for inflation?
You don't know what you're talking about.
I wish that was true. I wish to God it was. You're the only one who knew where we were going to be. Fuck! You're always hustling, negotiating for the greater part of nothing. You're like a broker for irrelevance.
Hey, now, Declan started.
All you care about is finding something to keep Matthew awake, to keep your life in place. You watched the world screw us over on a large scale over and over, and all I needed was for you to stay out of the way. I never asked for anything else. Just stay the hell out of the way.
I wasn't trying to stop you.
Ronan looked out the window, but now it was the opposite of before. His eyes weren't taking in anything. He saw the rose garden again and again, encountering not Matthew walking through the trellis, but a woman flying at them with Hennessy's stolen sword in hand. Were you just willing to take the risk they might kill me too?
I was doing it for you.
Ronan laughed. He laughed and laughed and laughed. It wasn't funny. Nothing was funny. When he had stopped, Declan said,
I had to get you away from him. The risk was worth it to get you away from him.
When Ronan didn't reply, he said flatly,
They didn't get him, did they?
Behind the wheel, Bride's expression didn't change. He looked neither angry nor surprised. He knew Declan had betrayed him, but he had not said a word against him. He hadn't said much at all since they escaped.
You're still with him, Declan said.
It wasn't a question.
You've left the city.
Ronan knew when silence was the meanest thing to deploy, and he understood that now was the time. He let Declan sit with the truth. After nearly a minute, when Ronan wasn't sure if Declan was really still there but refused to say, You still there? Declan finally said,
He's dangerous, Ronan. They're not wrong about him. I know you're not like that. I know you wouldn't kill people. I know you care about your future, about Matthew, about Adam, about...
Ronan hung up on him. For several long minutes, the car was silent. Ronan's mind turned over the rose garden again. Not the beginning this time, but the end. When he and Bride had run, and Hennessy hadn't.
Are you going to do it or not? Bride asked softly. Make a decision.
Ronan wasn't sure how he knew exactly what he'd been thinking, but he wasn't wrong. He rubbed his finger on his ear by the phone, thinking, deciding, and then he told the dreamt phone to dial another number. It was time.
Ronan?
Adam asked, surprised. He had picked up immediately, even though the display name would have just looked like nonsense. Why didn't you text back?
Text back? You didn't call. It's been weeks.
But why didn't you text back?
There was quiet.
Almost quiet. Wherever he was, Adam was moving locations. There was a sound of a door closing.
I was on a motorcycle. Then I was taking an exam. And then I was probably, I don't know, sleepy. I don't remember. I came to see you. I was making time best I could. It wasn't that long. I did text back. How could I know that you were going to ditch your phone? Ronan, you didn't call.
His accent was gone. It was like talking to a stranger. Ronan had thought this would feel different. Or maybe he didn't. He didn't know. His chest was still burning. Fire roars through him, right to the ends of his hands and toes. I'm calling now.
I didn't know what was happening, Adam said. I didn't know what you were doing, if you were even alive. I didn't know if we were... If it... What?
Ronan repeated. I'm calling now. I need to see you.
You're here?
Adam said, even more surprised than he had been when he first picked up.
Oh.
There was something about that O that Ronan didn't like the shape of. It seemed sad. Not as if Adam was sad when he said it, but more like something about that O was going to make Ronan sad. But he plunged ahead anyway. Can you let us lie low for a few hours while we figure out what's going on with Hennessy? Adam didn't reply right away. Then he said, Who's us? Me and Bride. They have Hennessy, I think. Ronan knew this was a lie, or at least a partial truth. Bride hadn't seen it, but Ronan had. He'd seen Hennessy turn around. He'd let her. God, everything was going to shit. Adam said very precisely, You can come lie low. Then, in case Ronan hadn't understood him, he repeated, You. How big of a douche do you think I am?
The lace is afraid of him, Ronan. I am too. Let him take this heat.
And then Ronan understood why the O had made him so sad. He'd known it subconsciously before, but now he knew it clearly. Adam had known Declan was betraying the dreamers. He had known the moderators would be waiting in the Rose Garden. They'd all been in on it. Part of Ronan was here in this invisible car racing away from his family, but part of Ronan was also in that memory of being curled in Illidorin as he nearly lost himself to Nightwash for good. Bride had tried to warn them about the others when he first introduced them to Illidorin, and Ronan and Hennessy had blown him off. They'd been so offended by his contempt for the dreamt phones, but now Ronan understood it exactly. Only the truth was worse than what Bride had warned. It wasn't simply that Declan and Adam didn't want to leave their own lives to come fight his battle with him. They actively wanted to stop the battle altogether. They wanted the world to change just enough to keep Ronan alive. Alive, but not living. That was good enough for them. It wasn't good enough for him.
Ronan, you know what I'm saying's true, Adam said. You know what's going on here. If you think about it, you have to.
Ronan hung up on him, too. He plucked the dreamt phone from his ear, rolled down the window, and threw it out as hard as he could. Then he leaned his head back against the seat as they drove out of the city with one less dreamer than they'd arrived with.
34. 20 minutes. Alarm. 20 minutes. Alarm. 20 minutes. Alarm. 20 minutes. Alarm. That was how Hennessy had been living at the beginning of all this, and that's how she had been living since she left the house with the young dreamers. She set the timer on her dreamt phone, and 20 minutes later, when it went off, she set it again. She had to wake up enough between each alarm to make sure she didn't fall back into a deep sleep. It could not be an 8-hour sleep interrupted dozens of times. It had to be dozens of sleeps for 8 hours. But that's not survivable, Carmen Farouk Lane said. Or fair. Farouk Lane was a very put-together sort of young woman. So put together it was difficult to discern her true age. When she said it, it seemed obvious. Like it made sense. Like the situation had been stripped of emotion, taken down to the studs, and revealed as unsound. Of course it was not survivable. Of course it was not fair.
They shouldn't have made so light of the lace, Liliana said in her sweet old lady voice. It was never going to be as easy as simply asking it to go away. Liliana the visionary was a very put-together sort of old woman. So put-together it was difficult to discern her true age, too. When she said it, it also seemed obvious, although Hennessy found the statement more difficult to accept.
Ronan and Bride had tried so hard to get Hennessy to just shunt the lace out of her dreams, and they'd told her so many times she was simply clinging to it. Whatever else the lace was, it was also her fault, and they'd seen it, so surely they knew. But that wasn't what Farouk Lane and Liliana seemed to believe. The three women were on the second floor of a convoluted historical tea house in a small room filled with overstuffed chairs, beanbags, end tables, and travel books. Clinking music played overhead. They had it to themselves. It was very intimate and safe feeling, which was the opposite of everything Hennessy had been doing for the past few weeks, past few years. Farouk Lane had driven them there as Liliana, in the passenger seat, used Farouk Lane's phone to search for an appropriate place to talk. It was a very different experience from Hennessy's previous travel. When looking for good places to crash and discuss plans, Bride and Ronan would not have filtered their searches for warm ambiance and free parking. It was clear from watching Farouk Lane and Liliana that they had traveled together a lot, and that they were both comfort-loving creatures. It was also clear they had crushes on each other. "This is all very life-affirming," Hennessy told them from her place in a beanbag. "Enriching and all that, but what of it? So it's not fair, and it's not easy. It's still there. There's still this thing hanging over me every time I dream. And if Ronan and Bride have their way, I won't be able to stop it." Liliana murmured something into Farouk Lane's ear, which made Farouk Lane's beautiful face go consternated. They both looked at Hennessy. "So I understand completely if you decide to kill me," Hennessy said, talking fast. "I've been thinking about it a lot. On previous episodes, it would have been a very selfish decision on account of my ladies and how they relied on me for their existence. But on this current run, everyone else dead, mostly, fate of the world in hands. Well," she spread her hands, or at least the best she could, considering she had a hot chocolate in one of them, "it's the selfless thing to do, really." "We have a different idea," Farouk Lane said. Hennessy narrowed her eyes.
"Do you mean you both had this idea, or she has an idea and whispered it to you just now?"
Liliana smiled sweetly. "I told you she was clever." Farouk Lane's businesslike expression didn't change.
"Can you dream something to suppress the ley line?"
Hennessy had one dream. The lace. Always the lace.
She was a bar with a single beer on tap. She was about to tell them this, but in the past, Jordan had always told Hennessy,
"You're not allowed to shoot down any more of my ideas until you've had one of your own."
So she didn't shoot it down. She sank down into the beanbag and stared at them instead. "I don't believe killing yourself is the answer," Farouk Lane said.
"You have value too."
"Ma'am, we've just met," Hennessy said.
Liliana broke in. "Do you know what it means to be a visionary, Hennessy? I don't always look like this. Sometimes I'm a girl. Sometimes I'm a woman. Sometimes I am this, what you see now. Every time I change between these ages, I have a vision of the future and all the sound that has happened or will happen in the intervening years comes out of me. It destroys everyone close enough to hear it. Over the years, I have met and will meet people who urge me to turn this vision inward. If I do that, I will no longer shift between ages, and I will no longer be a danger to those around me. But eventually, that method will kill me instead."
"I take it, since we're talking to the old version of you, you picked door number one," Hennessy said. "Keep exploding."
"Most visionaries die very young," Liliana said. "Too young to change the world. I'm still here not because I think my life is valuable, although I do think that,
but because staying alive means I have more visions. And the more visions I have, the more I can save the world from itself. You have value too, Hennessy. Value that comes from staying alive.
And if you turn off the ley line, Farouk Lane said, no more Zeds, dreamers, have to die. You're all only as dangerous then as you would be as normal people. You can only hurt or help as many people as anyone else.
She'd corrected herself, but Hennessy preferred the first term she'd used, Zed. That's right, zero, nothing, loser.
You don't have to feel this fear and pain all the time. You're allowed to stop it, Farouk Lane said.
I know you have no love for yourself.
Liliana broke in again, and her voice was so gentle that Hennessy felt absurdly close to tears again. They burned. She hated them. She wanted it to stop. How badly she wanted it to stop.
So you might not make this decision for yourself, because you don't think you deserve it. You can make it for others. It would be noble to stop it.
Stopping the ley line meant stopping Jordan in her tracks. Farouk Lane seemed to guess what she was thinking. If the end of the world comes, your dreams will die with the rest of us. This way they'll fall asleep. That doesn't have to be forever. Death is forever.
I wish you were dead, she told Jordan. Why do you always do this? Jordan asked.
Hennessy almost wished that Farouk Lane and Liliana had told her they were going to have to kill her after all. It wasn't exactly that she wanted to die. She just didn't want to live with herself.
You're forgetting one thing, she said. I only ever dream of the lace. All day, every day, it's the lace superstore. I can't dream something to shut down the ley line. I only ever dream of the lace.
The music plinked overhead. The beanbag hugged Hennessy. She drank some of her hot chocolate. The reviews Liliana had read on the way over were right. It really was good hot chocolate. It would be a good last meal.
Liliana looked at Farouk Lane, her expression sympathetic and soft.
Farouk Lane looked at Hennessy, her expression sympathetic and hard. Then she reached behind her to lay From Chaos in its scabbard in front of Hennessy and her beanbag.
Then explain this, she said.
35. Ronan had meant to dream Matthew. It had been Christmas time. Short days, long nights. He always got restless that time of year. Anticipation built in him as the days got smaller. Until around the end of December, the feeling eventually burst and left him feeling more ordinary again. He knew now that it had been a surge of the ley line. But back then, as a child, as a dreamer who was not permitted to give words to the dreaming, he hadn't known anything but that restlessness. It was a feeling that was only shored up by Declan's behavior. If Ronan became more alive as they crept toward winter solstice, Declan became less so. His eyes developed bags. His moods got short. The brothers did not fight then like they did when they were older, but the seeds were already sleeping in the cold soil. That particular winter had been unseasonably warm, and a few days before Christmas, Aurora sent the boys outside to kick a ball around. To Ronan's delight, the brothers discovered that the dun-colored fields around the farmhouse were lousy with starlings. Hundreds, perhaps thousands. When the birds first saw the brothers emerge from the house, they lifted up in a great swath of dark dots in the sky, like music notes on a page. But they quickly landed again just a few yards farther away. This was much better than kickball. For quite a while, they instead played a game of who can get closer to the flock. Ronan won. This was partially because he was shorter than Declan and thus more clandestine. But it was also because he wanted it more.
He was fascinated by this flock of flyers, this many-headed entity that was not tied to the ground. The birds were individuals, but when they lifted off, it was together in something even more magnificent than they could ever be on their own. Ronan didn't have words for how they made him feel, but he loved them. He wished he knew how to explain it to Declan. "I'd like a bird army," he said.
Declan's lip curled. "I don't think that would be very interesting."
"You're never into anything. You're the most boring person I know." Declan retrieved the ball. The game was clearly over. Without warning, Ronan ran directly into the flock. There was a brief moment of stillness, and then they all took off at once, surrounding him. It was so much like a dream. Wings upon wings upon wings. Too many birds to count. Too many voices to pick out individual sounds. He raised his arms. Ground and air seethed with birds, hiding both so thoroughly that it didn't seem entirely impossible that he had left the ground with them. "Imagine flying," he thought. "Imagine flying while awake. Imagine dreaming while awake." Then the birds had gone, and he was just a boy standing on the ground. He was not flying. Being awake was nothing like dreaming. His older brother was a few feet away, the ball tucked under his arm, looking at him with an expression of vague irritation. Ronan had never known such agony, and he didn't even have words for it. A few nights later, on the shortest night of the year, Ronan dreamt of the birds, only now they were ravens, not starlings, and there were fewer of them. They were gathered in the field in a purposeful way, studying something in the grass. They were muttering to themselves, "Make way, make way, make way." When Ronan approached to investigate, they scattered. In the grass where they'd been, he found a blonde-headed baby. In the dream, Ronan knew without being told that this was a new brother. The baby smiled at Ronan. His hands were already outstretched for Ronan to pick him up. He was so, so happy to see him. "Hello," he told the baby. The baby laughed. Ronan laughed too, and the awful feeling that had been inside him since that game of kickball dissipated. He scooped his new brother out of the grass, and then he woke up. When he did, Matthew Lynch was still there, squalling and brand new in the hallway outside his closed bedroom door. But the thing was, Ronan hadn't known. He hadn't known Matthew was dreamt, that Matthew was his dream. He couldn't remember how he'd explained it to himself at the time, but it must have been good and thorough because all he remembered of that time was his delight at having a new baby brother. He hadn't remembered the circumstances around it until Declan had cornered him during a particularly destructive time in high school and given him the story. Neil Lynch had given Ronan stories too, but they were always rewards. This was a punishment, a warning. "You dreamt Matthew," Declan said. "Don't you get it? If you get yourself killed, you're ending his life, too." "I don't think I did," Ronan said, but he knew he had. He'd just been pushing a memory away as hard as he could. It had been made easier by the fact that Matthew hadn't appeared right next to Ronan when he woke. Instead, like Ronan's dreamt forest, he'd appeared some distance away. It had also been made easier because Ronan didn't have words back then to talk about what had happened. He wasn't allowed to. "I was there," Declan said. "I know what happened. Saying it didn't happen doesn't make it real. You've got to keep this under control. His life relies on you." Ronan had lived with that weight since then. No more, he thought now. The ley lines would be powerful again. Matthew would have a life of his own.
"This will have to do," Bride said. They'd been charging away from Boston for a few hours when Bride pulled over abruptly. There was nothing remarkable about the stopping place. It was simply a one-track gravel road that led into a wooded picnic area with a rotting bench. Ronan stared around at their surroundings again, trying to decide if, in his misery over Declan, Adam, and Hennessy, he had badly misjudged how far they'd traveled. He could see a lake glistening through the dense trees. Everything continued to look very New England to him. We're still in Massachusetts, aren't we?
Connecticut, Bride said. But yes, you're right. But something is happening. We need to free Illidoran's line now, or we might not be able to. That's what the trees are telling me. This is the best place I've felt so far for the energy. I'd like more, but I don't think we can wait any longer to dream something for the dam. We won't make it all the way there.
Before what? Ronan asked.
But Bride just threw open the car door. Crisp, cool air flooded in. It was a lovely day. It was the sort of day that caused people to put coats on dogs and take long scenic walks. It was the sort of day it had been when Ronan had last visited Adam at Harvard. It was the sort of day that Ronan would have used to repair fences and siding if he had been back at the barns. It was also the sort of day for Ronan and Bride to sit in the dried leaves behind the car, leaning up against it, unfolding their dream masks. Chainsaw flapped up to a tree above them and waited.
What do you feel? Bride asked. Strange. Felt strange to do this without Hennessy. After this, Ronan vowed, he'd go back for her. He'd fix this, he'd fix her. But that wasn't the kind of feeling Bride meant. Ronan put his hands onto the ground to feel the ley line, but that made him think too much about how Adam sometimes did that when he was scrying. He draped him over his knees instead as he listened. The ley line was there, not overwhelming, but present, sufficient. He could feel its low, slow pulse trying to sync with his heartbeat, or vice versa. It's all right. I've never been to the dam. How are we supposed to know how to destroy it?
I know what it's like. I'll show you in the dream.
And you want us to dream something here to destroy it way down there? But Ronan answered his own question. It has to be something that can travel.
Yes, Bride agreed. Like the dolphins for the transmission line. Like the sun dogs you sent to save your brothers.
His voice had no bitterness. Declan had tried to get them killed, but he didn't spit the word brothers at Ronan. Instead, his voice, if anything, became softer on that word. Soft on brothers, hard on sun dogs. The entire sun dogs episode felt like a very long time ago. Ronan and Hennessy had been in Lindenmere. Ronan strimped Forrest, trying to banish the lace from Hennessy's mind with the help of Bride, who had been just a voice to them at that point. Bride had disappeared in a hurry as the moderators began to move in on other dreamers, and Ronan had received that fraught call from Declan that Matthew was in danger. Ronan still remembered the absolute terror he'd felt as he begged his Forrest to use the power of the ley line to produce the sun dogs. He remembered how he'd sped across the state toward Declan and Matthew, the exact opposite of what he was doing now. And he remembered clearly arriving to find his dreamt sun dogs had done what he'd asked, saved his brothers' lives. The exact opposite of what Declan had just tried to do. Declan hadn't been so worried about Ronan's ability when Ronan was hidden safely away until needed. Bride said, "We don't have much time." Ronan didn't know if he could stay focused with his thoughts as they were now. He wasn't thinking about the future. He was thinking about the past. Bride said,
I'll do my best to focus the dream. It will be different after this. Last push.
They dreamt.
In the dream, they were at the dam. Because it was Bride's dream, it was vividly rendered. Ronan could see it. Smell it, feel the unseasonably warm breeze on his skin. They were walking. He could feel it as if he were awake. The bite of his boot on the
zigzagging walkway the two of them followed, the echo of their steps off the back of the low concrete visitor's center which they passed, the tickle of gnats swarming from the overgrown dry brush, the buzz of a stink bug woken by the heat. Ronan would have been hard-pressed to identify how it was any different from waking life. "What do you feel?" Bright asked.
"Don't ask me that while we're dreaming," Ronan said. "It fucks me up."
They had come to a viewing area at the end of the walkway. Wordlessly, they leaned on the railing to look at the vast white dam. The scale of it was difficult to hold. On one side was the glittering blue water of the artificial lake, and on the other, hundreds of feet below, held back by the curved dam, was more glittering water, the choked Roanoke River. All about were mountains. The lake looked odd somehow, the water strange as it climbed the slopes, although Ronan couldn't understand why.
"They're drowned," Bride said. "These mountains were never meant to have water up to their chins. Picture this as a river valley instead. The dam did this. There are towns beneath that lake, if you can imagine. Beautiful, isn't it? Like a cemetery. How would you destroy it?"
For quite a long time, the two of them stood there as Ronan studied the dam and thought of what the smallest, easiest dream would be to destroy it. Before he'd fallen asleep, he'd been imagining something strong enough to bust through the dam itself, but that now seemed unacceptable. This was more water than he had pictured. All of these gallons would have to go somewhere, and who knew how many houses and roads had been built downstream of this now. He didn't want to kill anyone, so it would have to be something gradual, something with a bit of a warning. Not a lot, just enough to let people get out of the way. Not slow enough for them to stop it. Inexorable. Unfixable. His heart was beating hard in his chest. Just a few days ago, he'd been contemplating how he felt about destroying a trash dump, and here he was figuring out how to take down a project that surely had cost billions of dollars and taken years to build. The electricity it generated was used to power all the vacation homes he could see dotting the mountains. Probably. Ronan didn't know a lot about how electricity worked. He thought about how wonderful it was to dream in Lindenmere, where the ley line was good, where Lindenmere was focusing him, where everything was as he liked it. He imagined what it would be like to make that even better. He thought about the little Aldana Leon dreamers. He thought about Rhiannon Martin's mirrors. He thought about Matthew. He thought about himself. What it would be like to live without fearing he would manifest rooms of murder crabs or bleed to death from nightwash. He also thought about how Declan was worried that this was something he couldn't come back from.
"It is frightening how fast the world sickens," Bride said. "Decades ago it seemed like we had years. Years ago it seemed like we had months. Months ago it seemed like days. And now every day, every minute, every second, it is harder to be a dreamer. It's so noisy. Even here in the mountains, it is so noisy. How they shout at us all, even in our sleep. Soon there will be no place for the quiet things, the things that undo themselves when they have to shout. Soon there will be no place for secrets, the secrets that lose their mystery when they are uncovered. Soon there will be no place for the strange, no place for the unknown, because everything will be cataloged and paved and plugged in." Ronan thought about Adam's gloves set upon his shoes in the mudroom. He thought about wanting to feel like he had been made for something more than dying. "I know you are two things," Bride said. "I know you are of both worlds. That will never change."
"What if it's too much?" Ronan asked. "I don't know if I want to do it."
"You do."
"You can't just say I do. You don't know what I'm feeling."
Bride's voice was very, very soft. "I know you've already made this decision,"
You made it long ago?
On a hoverboard floating in the air? After Rhiannon Martin was killed?
Further back than that.
When we decided to go with you?
Further back than that.
No, said Ronan.
Yes.
All of Ronan's frustration burst out of him so strongly that the dream shivered with it. The air shimmered. The lake simmered. He was tired of the lessons, the games, the riddles. For some reason, he suddenly remembered the long-ago Christmas starlings bursting around him as Declan watched. That agony again of wanting to fly and being unable to explain it to anyone else. He was suddenly either very afraid or very furious. He snarled, "You can't know when I made the decision."
"I can," Bride said softly, "because I know when you dreamt me."
36. What is real? You make reality. Just like that, Ronan was in the worst dream again. The dam was gone. The lake was gone. The warmth and clarity of Bride's dream was gone, replaced with Ronan's old nightmare. He was standing in the bathroom of the barns, and there was a Ronan in a mirror. Behind him, Ronan could see the reflection of Bride standing in the doorway.
"No," he said. Bride said, "I only came because you asked me."
"No."
"Don't say no. You know. You knew."
"I didn't know."
"You knew," Bride insisted. "Deep down, you had to know. You had to ask for it, or it wouldn't have happened."
The dream changed. It was Lindenmere now. They were surrounded by Ronan's massive trees, standing in the clearing where he had heard Bride's voice with Hennessy that day. The dream was impossible to separate from reality. The details were perfect. Every lacy fern, every growing patch of lichen, every mote of dust and insect gleaming in the air.
"No," Ronan said again.
"They knew your name. They knew the rumors."
"You dreamt the rumors."
"No, I can't do that. Only you can do that sort of stuff. The orbs."
"You dreamt it into me."
"The forest was alive with sound.
Distant wings.
Claws. Talons. Mandibles. Even after all these lessons, Ronan was no less likely to corrupt a dream than when he'd brought the murder crabs out at Adam's dorm when push came to shove.
Why are you doing this?" "Why did you keep Adam out of your dreams?" Bright asked. "You were sure he would know. You wanted to pretend."
He frowned just a little, and Ronan could feel that he was mentally driving the encroaching claws and talons out of the dream. Effortless, controlled, where Ronan was not.
"I didn't want anything," Ronan said.
That was a lie. The dream threw it back at him. He thought he might throw up. "You knew about Hennessy?" "I didn't know about Hennessy."
"I know what Lindenmere knows," Bride said quietly. "I am both of you."
Oh, God. Now Ronan was playing it all back in his head. He was going over everything Bride had taught him. He was trying to recall the first time he'd seen Bride. The first time he'd heard Bride. He was trying to remember how he'd decided the game of finding him was worth playing. The promise of another dreamer had been so tantalizing. The promise of another dreamer who'd actually known what he was doing had been even more tantalizing. He could have generated that in a dream, just like those talons and claws. He'd wanted a teacher. He got a teacher. No. Ronan tried to think if Bride had ever told him anything that Ronan himself didn't already know, that Lindenmere, as a forest situated on the ley line, able to see other events along the ley line, wouldn't have known.
Oh, God. Bride getting his information from the trees. Bride often knowing what Ronan was thinking before he spoke. Ronan looking at Bride and thinking he looked familiar or something, and shying away from what he actually already knew. The rabbit hole kept leading down. He couldn't find bottom.
he was still falling. The dream was now an Irish shoreline. An ancient hawk flew over the black ocean. Ronan could taste the salt in his mouth. Cold shot through him. A damp cold that made it all the way to his bones. It didn't feel like a dream. It felt like reality. It felt exactly like reality. Ronan could no longer tell the difference between them. Bride said, "You wanted me. I wanted someone real. Reality doesn't mean anything to someone like you." Bride didn't have to say it. Ronan already knew it. He knew everything Bride knew, deep down.
"It's harder than I thought,"
Bride said, "being out here.
I thought it would be simpler. I thought I knew what I wanted. But it's so much louder. It's so, so much louder. I get confused."
Ronan's heart was breaking. "Your quest," Ronan said. "Your quest," said Bride.
Ronan closed his eyes. "You're just a dream." Bride shook his head.
"We already know what you think about that because I told you. What do you feel, Ronan Lynch?"
"Betrayed. Alone. Furious. He felt like he had Nightwash even though he didn't. He felt like he couldn't stand to look at Bride for one more second. He felt like he couldn't stand to be in his own head one more second. He felt like he couldn't tell if he'd ever woken up from that worst dream."
The black ocean boiled and then burned. Ronan's mind boiled and burned. Everything could burn if you hit it hard enough. "Nothing," Ronan said. "I can't feel anything." The grass was also burning now. The flaming waves had lapped the pebbly shore, which caught fire. And then the ascending cliff face had caught fire. And then the strange flames had wicked over the edge and caught the dirt and then the grass. The fire whispered to itself as it did its work. Its language was secret, but Ronan got the gist. It was starving. Bride said,
"Right now, Hennessy is trying to dream something to shut down the ley line for good. Can you feel her? We can go stop her. Or I can go stop her. Or you can try to stop me and let the ley line be shut down and kill all of this. Either way, you have to make a decision. Is this my quest? Is it your quest? Or is it nothing? For once in your life, stop lying. Stop hiding behind me. Ronan Lynch, what do you want?"
In the dream, sweet Aurora's voice came through gently. She was telling Ronan he had to bury it. He took a deep, shuddering breath. The fire was burning everything except for them. "I want to change the world."
37. When the ley line disappeared, it was a very nice day. All of New England was experiencing an unseasonably warm afternoon. But it was a good kind of unseasonably warm. Not warm enough to make all the conversation center around anything unpleasant like climate change and the growing price of avocados. But warm enough that residents could shed their coats and gloves and get some of the old steps in. Take the kid for a walk, knock the spiders off the badminton set in the garage. "Days like this," they said, "remind you what it's all about." Three Zeds were dreaming busily on this unseasonably warm afternoon and thus not able to enjoy it. Two of them, Bride and Ronan Lynch, slept just a few yards away from a car that was very difficult to see. They had not been dreaming long, but already dried oak leaves had flickered from the woods around them and lit upon their clothes. There is a certain wrongness to seeing leaves settle on a body. It is not the same as leaves drifting over a rooftop or a fallen log. It makes one anxious to see it. It is wrong. Opposite. The third dreamer,
Hennessy, dreamt on an oversized beanbag in a small room in a tea shop. Two women watched her closely. One of the women, a woman so old that numbers no longer felt relevant to describe her age, gently brushed her fingers across Hennessy's forehead as she slept. The other woman stood watchfully at the door, her hands on a dreamt sword with the words, "From Chaos," etched on the hilt. She was ready to swing it at once should Hennessy wake with a nightmare instead of a dream to save them all. "I don't have a good feeling about this," the woman with the sword said. "It will be all right," the old woman replied, brushing her fingers over the dreamer's forehead again, but her hand was trembling a little. The people who loved the dreaming Zeds were also unable to enjoy the warm afternoon. Adam Parrish, who loved Ronan, sat on the floor of his dorm room alone, a single candle lit, his tarot cards stacked face up beside it. He stared into the flame, throwing his mind out into the dream space. He was trying to reach Ronan Lynch, but it was like a phone that kept ringing and ringing. This was a dangerous game, but he kept trying. He let his mind wander a little farther from his body each time. "Ronan! Ronan!" But instead, he kept catching glimpses of Bride. Everything felt hot. He could smell smoke. He was smoke, drifting, drifting. "Oh, Ronan, what have you done?" he thought miserably. "What are you doing?" Matthew Lynch, who also loved Ronan, had gone walking, not wandering like a dream, but walking like an ordinary teen with purpose. While Declan was occupied with secretive errands, Matthew had set up an appointment with a local school for a tour. He was going to finish high school. He'd decided. He didn't know what he was going to do afterward, but until then, he was going to take Jordan's advice and start treating himself as real until Declan did too. It was a very stuffy school office, though, and he could see the day through the tiny window next to him. It was hard not to wish he was out there instead. He found himself, quite suddenly, thinking about fire. He wasn't sure why. He touched his cheek. It was hot. The school hadn't adjusted their heating for this unseasonable day. Declan Lynch, who also loved Ronan, was cornered in his own apartment by a handful of extremely pissed-off moderators. They had just lost 3 Zeds at a rose garden and had no visionary to provide further leads. They had not immediately decided how they were going to use Declan to get their hands on Ronan, but they had decided they would grab him first and then figure out the finer points later. He was all they had. "I'm no good as leverage," Declan told them. He thought about the gun he'd taped to the bottom of the kitchen table. It was 4 feet away, but might as well have been 400. Even if he could somehow get it, what was one gun against a room full of them? "As far as he's concerned, he thinks I just tried to get him killed." He couldn't help but think about how Bride's little dreamt orb would have let him walk out untouched. How Ronan's sun dog spilled from the bottle would have emptied this apartment instantly. Such power. Such power. For just a very few people to hold. "Oh, Ronan," he thought, suddenly angry that his brother could never see the bigger picture, the long game. "What are you going to do now?" Jordan, who loved Hennessy, was walking from her studio to Declan's apartment, head down, eyebrows furrowed, reading a news story on her phone. It was about a massive Boston street race that had sent 7 drivers to area hospitals in critical condition. The chief of police had given a statement urging drivers to remember that life was not a video game or a movie franchise. Actions like this had real consequences. She wondered if the play against Bride had worked. Declan wasn't picking up his phone. "I wish you were dead," Hennessy had told her. Jordan's cheeks felt hot as she walked. Fiery. Her chest ached and burned. She didn't know why Hennessy had to be like this. If they were still living together, they would have talked it out by now. Hennessy would have calmed down, gotten sad instead of mad, and eventually just gone limp, giving up. They would have once more reached equilibrium. Well, not they. Jordan was rarely the emergency. Hennessy was the emergency. Hennessy, thought Jordan, why didn't you give me all your memories? None of them guessed the fate of the afternoon was currently playing out inside the minds of the dreaming Zeds. The Zeds moved inside a shared dream that jerked from one thing to another. First it was the lace, jagged and hateful. Then it was the Smith Mountain Dam, with a slow, sentient fire picking away at its base. Then it was the game, with each Zed in a different car jockeying for control of both the race and the dream. It was a studio. It was a farm. It was a parking lot dumpster with opera singing sweetly. It was a teen girl in a gallery looking for Hennessy. It was a fire dragon exploding over a car. It was a bullet in a woman's head. It was Bride crouched next to Locke's body in a featureless field. This game of yours, Bride said to Locke's body, this game of yours will only end in pain. Take a look. The rules are changing. Do you understand? Do you understand what we could do? Leave my dreamers alone. Bride, Ronan said, but Bride didn't attend. Thanks for the focus. I couldn't do that without you here, Hennessy said. She stood by the invisible car watching Bride plow through his lines from the memory. God! Remember when you told me to kill my clones, and then we basically ran away with yours? She knew about Bride. She knew because the dream had presented the knowledge to her without remark, as dreams sometimes do. The knowledge was this. Bride was a dream. Bride was Ronan's dream. How are you doing that to him? Ronan asked. Hennessy narrowed her eyes at the horizon where smoke billowed. I heard him tell that moderator a clever thing at the Rose Garden. Did you hear him? He said he didn't play mind games. He just turned the sound down on the stuff that didn't matter. Why didn't he teach us that shit? That shit I can use. I'm using it now. He gave us such a hard time about what was real and what was a dream, but he was talking about himself too, wasn't he? He doesn't know what he really is any more than we do. What's real now, Bride? What do you feel? Bride didn't attend. He was still moving through the memory. Of course he has a stake in all this, Hennessy said. He told you he wanted to keep Matthew awake without you? He meant he wanted to stay awake. Fucking Oedipal, man. Shut up, Ronan said. What's your big plan here? Shut down the ley lines to keep away the lace? Hennessy popped finger guns at him. Then she reached into her pocket and pulled out a silver orb. It was possible to tell in the way of dreams that even though it looked a lot like Bride's silver orb, it was not at all the same. It pulsed its intentions through the dream. Its intention was this. Stop. The ley line. So what now? Hennessy asked. We like battle forever? Is that going to be how it is? I try to make this thing that will shut down the line and you change the dream so I can't remember what I was doing and round and round and round. The two Zeds eyed each other. The dream pulsed with unspoken feelings. But none of them were malice. Really, there were just two. One dreamer was feeling, I need this to stop everything. And the other dreamer was feeling, I need this to start something. And the other Zed, the Zed who was also a dream, kept going through the motions. He was walking toward an Airstream trailer that had just appeared in time for him to walk to it. Hennessy was somehow recreating the memory perfectly for him. Everything taken in with her artist's eye and thrown back at him. She was very powerful when she was doing that. On the horizon, the smoke continued to billow. The Smith Mountain Dam was there in the middle of these cornfields, being taken down slowly but surely by the unruly, otherworldly fire. Eerie dark herons circled above it, looking wispy as the smoke trail from a candle. They were ready to scoop up the fire and carry it wherever Ronan needed it to go. They would make the journey from Connecticut to the real dam in Virginia in very little time at all. Ronan was somehow holding the intention of the fire intact while also holding a conversation with Hennessy and also quietly shaping the dream into something else in the background without anyone noticing. He was very powerful when he was doing that. "The lace isn't here now," Ronan said. "As long as we work together, there's no lace. I can keep it away forever. We can take a break from what we're doing. Hennessy, I found you before. You were drowning. I came looking for you. I wanted to do this with you. Do you remember? Don't make me beg." Hennessy held the silver orb in front of one of her eyes and squinted, like it was a pirate's eye patch. Both of them could sense it. It was not so much a presence as a non-presence. It was an absence of potential. It was a TV with the cord yanked from the wall. She didn't say anything. Hennessy always had something to say, but she didn't say anything. "You fuck everyone this way," Ronan said. His quiet changes to the dream were now visible to him, although still hidden to her. Slowly, birds were gathering behind her. Hundreds, thousands. The fields were lousy with them. As he twitched his fingers by his side, they twitched too. A gathering storm. They had a single intention built into them too. Get the orb from Hennessy. Destroy it so that Ronan could wake without it. Destroy it so Ronan could wake with his damn destroying flames instead. "Have you thought about the consequences? You can't deal so the whole world has to instead?" "I'm the rubber, and you're the glue, Ronan Lynch," Hennessy replied. "What's funny is, Bride's you, and he's still more right than you are. You're still thinking like a non-dreamer. At least I'm thinking like a forger." She pointed behind him. Ronan just had time to look and see that the real Hennessy stood there, holding another silver orb in her fingers. This one was even stronger than the other Hennessy was holding. It was not just the absence of sensation. It was a blanket of nothingness. It was noise-canceling, sound-deadening, pressure-relieving, stain-lifting, subscription-canceling. And his birds were pointed at the wrong Hennessy and the wrong orb, and Hennessy woke up in the middle of the tea house. "Liliana," said Carmen Farouk Lane. "I know," replied Liliana. They both looked at the little silver orb cupped in Hennessy's paralyzed hands. They had not seen it appear. Instead, their minds bent and folded on themselves. One part of their brains tried to tell them the orb had always been there. The other part remembered that it had not. "The rule of dreamt objects is this. If it worked in the dream, it worked in real life. Hennessy's orb worked in the dream. It worked in real life. The effects upon the unseasonably nice afternoon were immediate. Dreamt birds dropped out of the sky here and there, pinging off windshields and onto the sidewalk before coming to a rest, sleeping. Dreamt dogs suddenly slept at dog parks, much to their owner's surprise. Cars veered off the road and into each other, their dreamt drivers suddenly staring into space. A nanny pushing a pram outside a converted church in downtown Boston found herself pushing a child who could not be woken. Social media lit up with reports of power outages as wind turbines mysteriously dozed to stillness. At Logan Airport, A landing aircraft completely missed the runway and careened toward the bay. Air traffic control shouted to an unresponsive pilot before turning its attention to the radio reports of other planes dropping out of the sky across the globe. In a very stuffy school office, Matthew Lynch put a hand to his burning hot cheek. "Are you all right, honey?" asked the school secretary. "I'm sorry," he muttered, and then he fell fast asleep. In Declan Lynch's apartment, Declan Lynch watched in astonishment as Locke stopped speaking mid-sentence and fell to his knees, followed by two of the other moderators. In the shock, he leapt for the gun beneath the table. Ripping it from its place, he pointed it at one of the three remaining moderators. "What's going on here?" Declan demanded. But the others, too, swayed against each other. They were asleep before he got his answer. Their sleep was the answer. In a Connecticut picnic area, Bride sat up, shaking leaves off his body and memory cobwebs from his mind. He reached into the pocket of his gray jacket and looked at the sweet metal he had stolen off Locke weeks and weeks before. It was not very strong, but it was enough for now. He looked then to Ronan Lynch, who still slept, leaves across his face. "Wake up," he said, but Ronan did not. On the sidewalk in front of Declan's apartment, Jordan stood with her head tilted back, listening to sirens wailing. In front of her, a bird plummeted thoughtlessly to the sidewalk with a surprisingly quiet flump. She crouched beside it. It was a beautiful little thing, jeweled and impossible. She touched its chest softly. It was not dead. It was fast asleep. Her heart was beating very, very fast. She could feel the ley lines sucking away from her, away from everything. It was like feeling the air leaving a room. It was like that day all those weeks ago when Hennessy had dreamt an entire ocean into the room and she'd suddenly found herself inhabiting a world that wasn't meant to support her. One couldn't argue with an ocean. Either you had an oxygen tank or you didn't. At the end of the sidewalk, the door to the apartment building burst open. Declan stood in it, his jacket half pulled on, his keys dangling in his hand. She didn't need to be told that he had been coming to look for her. She could see it in his body language, in his face. "Jordan," he said, "you're..." She could see another bird falling from the sky, a larger one, at the end of the street. It set off the car alarm when it hit the windshield. With wonder, she said to Declan, "I'm awake." She was very, very awake. It really was a nice day. End of book two. This is Will Patton. We hope that you have enjoyed Mr. Impossible, The Dreamer Trilogy, Book 2, by Maggie Stiefvater. This program was produced and directed by Scott Sherritt. Executive producer, Paul R. Gagne. Post-production by Danny Meltzer. Recorded by Julian Dreyer at Echo Mountain Studios in Asheville, North Carolina. There Are Not Two of You, by Maggie Stiefvater. Performed by Maggie and William Stiefvater. Print edition published by Scholastic, Inc. Text copyright 2021 by Maggie Stiefvater. Production copyright 2021 by Scholastic, Inc. All rights reserved.